just wanted to get this off my chest. Yeah. That like, yeah, that awesome God stuff. And like a lot of his stuff was so Jesus centered, and that was such an important part of his life. But I connected with so much of the songs that were not necessarily so Christian on his albums. I don't know that he would like be into that or not, because he was really, really into Jesus and really into the Christian sort of mindset and like questioning that. And I was too when I was a kid. As I've gotten older, I've gotten more into like that old friend, like Hello Old Friends. Like, I love that song. There's so many good parts in there. You were talking about What Susan Said, or like even songs like Jacob and Two Women. That's such a weird song when you're a teenager listening to Rich Mullins. You're like, what is this guy talking about? And then the older you get more into it, and you're like, oh, this is super cool.
Welcome to Curious Goldfish, a podcast community where music and curiosity come together through interesting conversations with the music makers of our world. I'm your host, Jason English. You can find Curious Goldfish in all the major podcast and social media platforms. And of course, we have all of our content on our website, CuriousGoldfish.com. This is part two of a two-part series with Fort Worth singer-songwriter Jacob Furr. Please check out the first episode if you haven't already. I talked to Jacob about the Fort Worth music scene and his album he released last year called Turning. Jacob also opened up about his tragic loss of his wife to brain cancer when he was just 26 and all the things surrounding that he had to endure in order to move forward. In this episode, things take a little more spiritual turn. 2 days before I spoke with Jacob, he posted a clip of himself covering a song by the late Christian music legend Rich Mullins called Hello Old Friends. And it went something like this.
Hello old friends, there's really nothing new to say. The old old story bears repeating. The plain old truth grows dearer every day. When you find something worth believing, that's a joy that nothing could take away. And so we meet again after all these many years. Did we sow the seeds we're reaping? Now that the harvest calls us here, it seems the love blooms out of season. Much joy can blossom from many tears. So friends, you must forget what you had to forgive. Let love be stronger than the feelings that rage and run beneath the bridge. Knowing the morning follows evening. Makes each new day come as a gift.
I, too, grew up in the American Evangelical Church like Jacob. I, too, only listened to Christian music for the better part of my adolescent years. Thank God for Rich Mullins, because out of a vast sea of mediocrity, bland lyrics, and generic instrumentation, Rich Mullins stood out. I talk about it with Jacob, but Mullins' most popular song was likely his worst. It's called Awesome God, which shouldn't be a surprise to too many people because few people had the guts to peel back the layers of scripture to really try to understand the height, the width, the depth, and the length of the love of God like Rich did. Just singing or hearing "Our God is an awesome God" was good enough for most Christians. But Rich was different, and Jacob and I agree on this topic. You'll hear us discuss this in surprising detail. So you can consider this episode as mine and Jacob's tribute to Mullins, who died nearly 30 years ago in a car accident. Jacob wraps up this episode with another cover of Mullins, a song called "Boy Like Me, Man Like You," which was pure Rich, creatively tying two distinctively separate things, the humanity of Christ and a believer's journey to become more Christ-like, together. Rich asks of Jesus if he ever did things a normal boy would do, like play with a dog and lick his nose, and play beneath the spray of a water hose, or make angels in the winter snow. So please listen for that, because Jacob covers it really, really, really well. But this episode is also a lament, a shared lament between Jacob and myself of time spent at an ultra-conservative Christian church camp in Manitou Springs, Colorado, called Summit Ministries. Jacob attended as a high school student years after I worked there as a counselor while I was in college. Although the premise then seemed like an appropriate use of our time, if you're a young Christian, why wouldn't you want to take classes from college professors about how to defend your faith? The teachings reeked of conspiracy and political extremism. I worked there in the summer of 1995, just months after the Oklahoma City bombing, and I remember one of the speakers came in and spent 2 hours walking through how the entire thing was an inside job of the federal government. I remember thinking to myself, what exactly does this have to do with believing in God? I had no idea I would share so much in common with Jacob, so forgive us as we unintentionally use this time for a little bit of sharing and therapy. You can be a fly on a wall while two grown-ass adult men reminisce about a musical hero and at the same time share mutual regret about being misled by insecure men looking to scare young adults into a faith steeped in judgment, fear, and shame rather than in love and forgiveness. We pick up the conversation talking about Jacob's plans for the rest of 2024. Once again, here's Jacob Furr of Fort Worth, Texas. Let's jump back in. Sometimes you may not be that motivated to write new stuff, but beyond this 3-album series, what do you have planned in the future? Mm. Has it come into fruition yet?
Yeah, I got this idea in September. So like I released that record, went to Nashville, played Americana Fest, and then with Here Fort Worth. Thanks, Here Fort Worth. And then on the way back, my mom had sent me this like Facebook group that she found, because she's really into like all that genealogy stuff. And she found there was like a county poor farm in Arkansas that our great, great grandfather ran for a while. And it's this really interesting story all about like he had like 20 kids and there were like 30 people that lived on the farm. And they just found out where the farm was at and where like the burial site was for everybody that passed away on the poor farm because there's no market. Fascinating story, like really super cool, really tied into my family history. So I'm trying to work on that right now. And I'm like trying to like get away from like such sort of like diary writing and more into like, okay, can I do the storytelling side of this as well? So that's my challenge right now, is to like get through at least 5 songs for that.
Seriously, that sounds fascinating.
It'll be interesting.
Where,
yeah.
Is it in Texas?
No, it's in Arkansas.
Oh, Arkansas.
Yeah, it's in like northeastern Arkansas. Yeah, right. I forgot what town. It's Moore County, something like that. Yeah, it's way up there. But yeah, it's like, you know, back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, that's what you did with people that couldn't support themselves anymore. You just went to the poor farm. And the original idea was that you were supposed to work on the poor farm, or that they would lease you out to other farms as like a day laborer to help pay for the poor farm where you could live. And quickly figured out that that's like completely impossible. People with all sorts of, you know, stuff where we would put them in a home, you know, care facility or something today. Like they were just like, well, I guess we put them on the farm. Like, and you know, they just, all kinds of people, like all kinds of issues and problems and, you know, things like that. So it's hard to write about.
So yeah, are you going to try to put yourself in that setting as a character or a series of characters?
Right now I am. The song that I'm working on right now, I've been working on one song since September because I can't quite figure it out. And it's about, there's a story in this news article, this lady that would visit the poor farm to do like charity work out there. She put an article in the newspaper that said, can anybody donate a baby buggy? Because they've had they had five children dropped off the week before. Four of them got adopted like immediately, but the fifth one is I don't know the correct terminology for it. Can't move his legs or arms, basically. Right. So there's a child, like a five-year-old child, that has no family anymore. Mom and dad are gone. Four brothers and sisters are adopted. He's on this farm completely alone. Can't move.
Like, oh my gosh.
Intense stuff. So I'm trying to write about that right now. So it's a challenge. Yeah. So like I had to do some exercises yesterday to be like, okay, how am I going to get in the head of this person? And how am I, cause I don't want to be like super maudlin about it at all. And I don't mean to talk about this song too much, but like, cause I haven't written it yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like, it's hard. It's really, really hard. Yeah. I'm trying not to be too like real bummer about it and like give this kid some agency somehow in the song.
Sure.
Or as much agency as I can. So yeah, I had to do some like exercises on that I haven't done before. Cause usually I've been writing just purely from the gut and just being like, this is how I feel about something, you know?
So what do you mean by exercises? Like mental exercises?
Yeah. Mental exercises, writing exercises. Like the mental exercise that I did yesterday was like, okay, if I'm going to write about this kid and I'm going to like be this kid, what's it like to just sit outside and not be able to move? Mm. And so I tried to like, I went and sat in my backyard and was just like, okay, no arms, no legs, no phone, can't move. Just going to sit here and listen and watch. And I lasted like 2 minutes before I was like, this is so uncomfortable. I have to go inside.
Oh wow.
So yeah, like sort of stuff like that where I was like, what does it feel like? What can you pay attention to? What's going on if you don't have the use of this stuff? So I don't know.
That's wild. Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be.
That reminds me of two things. One, I think Johnny Cash is from Dyess, Arkansas, mm-hmm. where it's like, you know, there was like the riverland and poverty,
yeah.
you know, cotton fields, like very hard life.
Absolutely. Right?
So I'm not sure if that's in, you know, proximity to where your family was, but that just reminds me of like, story.
No, it's very similar stuff.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's real similar stuff. I don't know what they were planting on the farm at all. Cause it was a working farm. Like my great grandfather and his family like ran it and it survived it was there for 100 years. So they did something. But I haven't quite gotten into the farm side of it yet. Like I'm trying, this kid was my main intro to it. So I'm trying to knock that out first. And then once that story's sort of told, be like, okay, how do I explore these other parts of this? So I'll probably do something about cotton or corn or something.
No, that's amazing. Yeah, and the other thing that reminded me of is one of the people I interviewed at the beginning of this podcast is a guy who's in Nashville. His name's Matthew Kilo.
Okay.
And he talks about his family's origin story was this his first album.
Oh, wow.
It's very similar.
I love that.
It's about the song on there that is the killer song. We talk a lot about it. It's I think it's the Birds of Crenshaw County.
Oh, very
cool.
So it's
Crenshaw County, Alabama. And he talks about how this town has buzzards just up on the water towers and on the buildings, just waiting to like go and like find prey, you know.
Oh,
anyway, he wraps this whole thing around it, but he called it his family's origin story, and
that's fascinating.
It's really good.
I need to listen to something like that because like I'm trying to like listen to other albums that have that sort of place and storytelling where they're together. Like it's like, okay, I'm going to talk about all the stories from this one place, and like how do you get creative in that space, because I haven't done it and I've never written like that. So I'm trying to like expand my abilities and expand my storytelling capabilities and be like, what can I do here? You know, how can I tell this story?
So, no, that's great.
Yeah. That's fascinating. I love that other people do it so well.
Yeah. He's really, really interesting guy. All right. So speaking of songwriting and storytelling and I think one of the best is a guy named Rich Mullins.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
So on your Instagram, a couple of days ago, you posted, for those of you that don't know who Rich Mullins is, he was part of the mainstream contemporary Christian music industry, but he was not of the contemporary Christian music industry.
Yeah.
Back in the 80s and 90s. And he died tragically in a car accident, I think in 1997. And, what was funny about your post, because you do a cover, which I thought was great. And there's a song called Hello, Old Friends.
Yeah.
Really well done. And you said it in the comments. What's so funny about Rich was his worst song. Yeah, his worst song ever
that he legitimately hated. Like, yeah, I mean, I think he did because he said some stuff about it.
But yeah, his worst song ever is this song called "Awesome God," and it's like his most popular. But I think can I correct the record?
Go for a second. Yeah, no.
Because you were probably pretty young when he was alive.
Oh, so, yeah, because he died when I was like
11, right?
10 or 11. Yeah, something like that.
Which
yeah,
is crazy.
So I had to get into him afterwards.
Yeah. So I saw him. I actually saw him a bunch because I grew up in the Midwest in Missouri, and he would play a lot of church camps. So I'd see him quite a bit, and he told a story about Awesome God. I think he wrote it driving west on Interstate 70 from Indiana, you know, Illinois, Missouri, Kansas, Colorado, and it was like thunderstorming, and he said that he had his window rolled down, and he was kind of like yelling to God, like, you know, and it wasn't like, oh, our God's an awesome God, dude. It was like, you know, the notion of awesomeness where it's the thunder, the lightning in that. So I think that was the context.
Yeah.
I still think he didn't like it or he wasn't his favorite. But anyway, that was a digression.
That's amazing. I didn't know that about him, like writing it in that because I've been in that space, like where you're driving through that thunderstorm and it's just completely overwhelming. And that's what I've always loved about Rich's stuff is,
So how, tell me about your, obviously you were younger. Did you grow up in the church and like the whole notion of, you know, Christian music, which I definitely want to talk to you about.
Yeah. Definitely grew up in the church. Definitely grew up with only Christian music.
Yeah.
My uncle was the one that introduced me to Rich Mullins. I'm trying to remember. I was a teenager. I have an uncle Ray that lives on the East Coast, and he taught me how to play a 12-bar blues and then also introduced me to All Right, Okay, Uh-Huh, Amen.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, this is like, this is the coolest song and this is the blues. And I was like, okay, cool. And so from there, like, it took off into my love for Rich Mullins. But Rich was like, I was thinking about this weekend because we kind of talked about it after I posted on Instagram, like, because I haven't really engaged with his stuff in a while. Like, and it's always been really important to me. Like when I'm like on a road trip by myself, I listen to it by myself, but like just thinking about it again this weekend after, cause I posted that video just sort of as a goof. Cause I have a guitar that like was in a new tuning. I was like, oh, I can play that song here. But like so many people were responding to it and like, oh yeah, it meant so much to me. And I was like, man, what does Rich still mean to me nowadays? Like, what does this music still, speak to me about? He was just I don't know, he was like the dude that like sensitive people like myself could connect to in the church, especially after the fact, because he wasn't cool when I was a teenager, like at that point in like the, you know, when would be that would be the, like 1999,
sure,
Rich Mullins was not cool,
right?
Like
right.
2000, 2001, or like
it was Third Day.
Not, yeah, it was Third Day. Oh, Third Day.
It was Newsboys.
Yes, Newsboys and Third Day. But like Rich was not cool at all. And to say that anything is cool in that Christian music scene is hilarious to begin with. But like, but just in the context of church kids, yes, like, exactly. And what's cool with church kids.
So cool.
Rich wasn't even cool for church kids, but he was like the thing that like really sensitive dudes like myself that wanted to play guitar and wanted to write songs and had the sort of questions that he had about things. He was really our connecting point, because I think all those other people were so industry brained.
Oh my gosh.
That it was, you know, there was no room for questioning any of it, you know.
Totally. I think I've said this before, but my take on, even at the time, even though I grew up in the church, I'd listened to a lot of Christian music growing up. I always got the sense that apart from him, everybody else was kind of trying to make a buck off Jesus, you know?
I think that's absolutely true, because now that I've been playing music for a long time and like have met people in Nashville that are like higher up the chain, like I've been told stories about, and I was like, that guy, really? And they're like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay. Yeah. This totally was just an act
that
people were putting on, but it's a very Nashville thing too.
Right, totally.
Like, cause that's a whole thing up there, is that like gospel Christian music thing up in Nashville that like is very, very much a product that is sold. And so people like Rich, Mark Hurd, Buddy Miller and Julie Miller, like that whole crowd, I didn't discover them until way later. Like, even like, I'm talking like recently, didn't know that they were all connected in Nashville by this like sort of underground Christian songwriting thing, or like Bruce Cockburn. Like all of them were in this Christian underground that was just very not not cool to listen to back then. And but like Rich was like my dude.
Well, you mentioned Grace Pettis earlier. Her dad, Pierce Pettis,
is in that dad.
Yeah, that
I didn't know that's her dad.
Isn't that cool? I reached out to her without even knowing she was the daughter. And I was like, you know, she's going to be at this festival. I want to talk to her. And then that was one of my favorite episodes too, just because of the message around, you know, homosexuals in the church, which is the whole thing. But I was like, I had no idea you were Pierce's daughter.
That's crazy.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I didn't know that either. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that whole Christian scene from music then is, continues to be influential. And yeah, a lot of Rich's stuff. I just wanted to get this off my chest that like, that Awesome God stuff. And like a lot of his stuff was so Jesus centered, and that was such an important part of his life. But I connected with so much of his, the songs that were not necessarily so Christian on his albums. And I don't know that he would like be into that or not, because he was like really, really into Jesus and really into the Christian sort of mindset and like questioning that. And I was too when I was a kid. But like as I've gotten older, I've gotten more into like that old friend, like Hello Old Friends. Like I love that song. There's so many good parts in there. Or like you were talking about What Susan Said, or like even songs like Jacob and Two Women. That's such a weird song when you're a teenager listening to Rich Mullins. You're like, what is this guy talking about? And then the older you get more into it. And you're like, oh, this is really, this is super cool.
Well, I think for me, you know, it's one thing to sing Jesus is Lord over and over again. You know, there's not a lot of thoughtfulness in that.
Yeah, for sure.
But for him, like the song that I always come back to, it's called If I Stand.
Yeah.
He doesn't say the word Jesus once.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, there's more that rises in the morning than the sun, more that shines in the night than just the moon.
Yeah.
There's more than just this fire here that keeps me warm.
I'm literally getting goosebumps.
In a shelter that is larger than this room. You know, it's like that to me, that paints the picture of, you know, if you believe in a God that's a creator, you can't get any better.
Yeah.
And but he didn't say, you know, I love Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, but so I love that, because he's interesting, because, you know, in the Grace Pettis episode, you know, I included a clip of his about homophobia. Just because he always was counterculture to like American evangelicalism. And I'll never forget this moment. So I worked at now I'm kind of embarrassed to admit, but a very, very conservative Christian camp in Colorado.
Oh,
when I was in college.
Which one? Was it Summit? Yeah, it was Summit. Yeah, it was Summit, Jason. I knew. Yeah, buddy.
For one summer. And you know,
I attended twice.
Oh my gosh.
I did, because I was homeschooled. I did a course at home. Like not at home.
Yeah.
We had like a co-op.
Yes.
That we would get together, and I aced that class. I was so good at worldview.
The worldview. David Noble.
David Noble.
Yeah.
We're going to upset some people now. Here we go.
I may not include this because it's so embarrassing.
No, dude. I'll tell you what. Because legitimately, have you ever like searched, like, was anybody else in Summit? It's real hard to find anybody because nobody admits it.
Oh, nobody admits it.
Nobody wants to talk about it. Like, you can get on Reddit. I've tried so hard to find so many community to be like, can any of us please talk about what we were taught there and like how we had to like deconstruct from that later on. Like, woof, it's intense, and it's because nobody wants to talk about it.
No, nobody wants to talk about it.
Yeah.
It's
anyway, sorry.
You were telling
a story about teaching there, and I just got you off track.
I was a counselor there in college, right, for a summer. And so listen, you know, I grew up in the church, and I valued the fact that, you know, you believe in the Bible. You want to believe that, you know, what, as they say, all scriptures God breathes, you know, and can be used for teaching and all that. And, you know, as you get older, as you travel the world, you know, you start to wonder, right? Mm-hmm. But like, you know, at the time when I was there, I wanted to arm myself with evidence of, you know, the Gospels and evidence of Jesus and evidence of the Bible. But it just, looking back, it was actually like so conspiratorial, even before I knew what that was.
I was going to say it was very fear-based.
Very fear-based, yeah.
And the thing that Rich cut through with for me was like, I did all the things out of fear. And, but what I loved about Rich was like, none of what he was talking about was fear-based. Like, it was all this, like, it was beauty-based and love-based and poetry, but like, it was just poetry. Yeah. It wasn't, okay, I'm gonna, you know, sing off the Lee Strobel, like, you know, like, God, nobody knows who that is except you and me. Oh my God. Oh man. Anyways, but
Josh McDowell,
because there were people that had songs back then that were like very much into that. And like the closest he ever got to that was, on Ragamuffin, the Creed.
Oh, Creed. Yeah. Yeah.
Like singing Creed. But for an evangelical kid who never heard the Creed.
Yeah. That was Catholic.
Grew up in Southern Baptist church.
Right. Right.
Hearing that Creed and being like, yeah, I believe all these things. And then starting to dive into the history of it and be like, oh, there's a whole other world of Christianity here and a whole other way of thinking about the world that doesn't involve David Nobles and these like fear mongering people. And like Rich was like the dude for sensitive question askers that were allowed, that if you weren't allowed to ask it in Sunday school, you could at least go listen to Rich Mullins on the drive home
100%
and like feel okay with not understanding anything. And like listening to songs about him, like questioning the Father's love or like if he's being loved by God or whatever, and be like, yeah, that's how I feel right now. I don't feel sure. Right. You know,
it's not all peaches and cream.
No, it's not. And it's not all certain. Right. Like it's not certain in any way. Right. And I think that's especially like when I got his book, That Arrow Pointing to Heaven, and like realized like how questioning he got later on and like was diving deeper and deeper and deeper into the like older traditions. I was like, oh man, this guy's definitely forging the path that I feel spiritually as well. Like I want to keep going backwards into this thing and like, yeah, just not accepting this like sort of modern American version of this, you know, that I've been told is like the ultimate version, you know?
Right. Well, to tie the bow. So my Rich Mullins story related to Summit, love this.
Yeah, I can't wait.
So he and Beaker, his, you know, his collaborator and music partner, it was right after the Brothers Keeper album, it was 1995. They were going around and they played at a Christian bookstore in Colorado Springs. Mm. You can't have a more Christian bookstore than in Colorado Springs. Let me just tell you.
Yeah, no kidding.
So anyway, I go and see him, and you know he's got his lap dulcimer, the hammer dulcimer, the guitar, all the things, really really cool stuff. And afterwards, he's hanging out, and I forgot how it came up, but he's like, do you live here? What are you doing? I'm like, well, you know, I was so proud. Mm-hmm. I was like, no, I'm a counselor.
Yeah.
At this really cool Christian camp called Summit Ministries. And like, you know, we're teaching college kids and high school kids, like how to defend their faith and, you know, why the Bible is true and, you know, all the lines. And all he said to me, he just looked at me. He's like, that sounds like brainwashing. And I was like,
oh man,
just stuck in my tracks.
Man.
And I was like, he's right.
It just went straight to it, man. Just straight. That's it. Oh, how did he do it? That's because sorry, I know that we're like, your podcast is like real short. You're like one person that I got that like is like on the same side of this with me. Anyway, so yeah, that's fascinating.
Well, here's the thing about what I'm, you know, obviously him dying in the accident was horrible.
Yeah.
And actually that actually affected my faith probably more than anything.
I bet. Yeah.
Because I was just like, really, you're going to like this guy's going to go.
This is
that's the guy.
Yeah.
You know, like really, he's the one that actually is the best example of.
Buddy, right? That's been my entire journey.
You know,
of this has been like, that's the person that goes.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the brightest person I've ever met. And that it literally just happened today. Like I had a friend of mine passed away today And I was just like,
right,
that's the dude. Right. Like, of all the people doing all the awful things in the world, that's the dude that, okay, you know, it's, this is all random.
No, that's fine. Yeah. Well, but, you know, I've thought a lot about it in like the last 25 years. I so would have wanted Rich to get outside of Nashville. Mm. I mean, he would lived in New Mexico, but like, do what you do, like independent art.
Yeah,
band camp, you know, doing his own thing, because you know how much cool stuff would be.
I think he would have. I mean, like, look at the way that, like I said earlier, the Millers,
right?
Like that whole thing, like they were way into it, and then all of a sudden they're in a band with Robert Plant,
right,
and Daryl Scott, right, and like doing this like sort of Americana thing that they basically invented with Emmylou Harris. They're like an integral part of this thing, and what people don't talk about in the Americana scene is like how much of that is influenced by this like gospel music and this like early 90s CCM stuff that they were writing with Mark Hurd and Rich Mullins. And like, it's in there. And Julie's songs, like there's so much that's like still infused in all of that stuff. So yeah, I think Rich would be a fascinating contributor to that these days. Like, cause he was just on a whole different level to begin with. And not to say that Buddy and Julie aren't good, like they're amazing, but not that, not that specific way, you know, that truth-telling way that he was.
Yeah, he was next level for sure. So, like, at this point in your career, what are you most curious about?
I'm curious about this poor farm that I'm trying to write about, trying to write story songs. So I'm learning a lot of story songs right now to sort of like figure out the language and the flow of those. And then I'm like really into traditional music right now, like, just because I feel like my lyrical well has sort of like dried up from like having all this like deeply emotional stuff that I've written about for like a decade. So I'm kind of like tired of writing words. So I'm just like learning about a lot of like traditional music and like trying to learn like
what
folk tunes and Irish stuff and like, you know, like, I mean, 10-minute long ballads from like England, like the child ballads, like, just nerding out really hard and just enjoying these things that are sort of outside the norm.
No, that's good.
Yeah.
What's your timeline for the, you know, your Poor Farm album?
I don't know. I've got a folk album that I'm going to try to put out this year. That's like, some older songs of mine that are on the previous three records, but like they either got covered up with like production or so they're just like straight, like acoustic guitar and vocal. And then there's four like traditional child ballads on the end of that album too. So I'm going to put that out first, maybe this year, and to buy myself some time to finish this Poor Farm album.
Cool.
Yeah. Cause it's being a pain. It's not fun.
Yeah.
But no, it's worth it.
Well, it's hard.
It's worth
That's
it.
Hard. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a stretch from what you've done.
It's a big stretch. Yeah. And I'm really swinging for it and trying to be like, can I do this other thing? And if not, I'll just go back to writing diary songs, but we'll see what happens.
Well, if you're ever in Atlanta, you gotta hit me up.
I would love to hang out with you in Atlanta. Yeah. I think we played, Smith's Old Bar there a long time ago. I've played that place a couple of times. That's fun. Like just classic Atlanta place. I think that's the only place I've ever played in Atlanta, but that's a long drive. I gotta get out there though. I gotta make it happen.
Yeah, we could do a house show with my friends.
You like, do that?
It'd be good.
I'm way into that. Yeah let's do
so this. The first episode I did, it was Bradley Cole Smith and this guy named Nelson Nolan, amazing musicians. Nelson's brother opened Smith's Old Bar.
Oh, very cool.
And they talk a lot about
that's wild.
They talk a lot about it in the episode.
That's a cool place. It was fun to play there. Yeah, it was a trip, but it's a long way to go.
Well, you're always welcome.
Well, thanks. Yeah,
I'd love to do it. Thanks for your time, Jacob. Can you play us some music?
Yeah, let's do this.
All right, cool.
This is Jacob Furr, and this is the Rich Mullins song "Boy Like Me, Man Like You" on the Curious Goldfish podcast. You was a baby like I was once. You crying in the early morning. You were born in a stable, Lord. Read memorial is where I was born. They wrapped you in swaddling clothes. Me, they dressed in baby blue. I was 12 years old in the meeting house.
listen to the old men pray. And I was trying hard to figure out what it was that they was trying to say. There you were in the temple. They said you weren't old enough to know the things you knew. Did you grow up hungry? Did you grow up fast? Did the little girls giggle when you walked past? Did you wonder what it was that made them laugh? Did they tell you stories about the saints of old? Stories about their faith? They say stories like that make a boy grow bold. Stories like that make a man walk straight. A boy like I was once, or was you a boy like me? Well, I grew up around Indiana, you grew up around Galilee. And if I ever really do grow up, Lord, I want to grow up and be just like you. Or did you wrestle with the dog and lick his nose? Did you play beneath the spray of a water hose? Did you ever make in the winter snow? Did they tell you stories about the saints of old? Stories about their faith? They say stories like that make a boy grow bold. Stories like that make a man walk straight. Did you try not to cry when you scraped your knee? Did you ever skip a rock across a quiet creek? And did they tell you stories about the saints of old? Stories about their faith? They say stories like that make a boy grow bold. Stories like that make a man walk straight. Mm-hmm. But I really may just grow up and be like someday.
Thanks so much for joining us for another episode of Curious Goldfish. Please follow and subscribe to the podcast and on social media. Also, tell your music-loving friends about us, too. Until next time, stay curious.